Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street. Good Thursday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer, David Faber at the New York Stock Exchange. Got some weakness in futures. Markets will get another chance to react to Fed Chair Powell today when he appears before Senate Banking in about half an hour. Morgan Stanley's in focus. Jobless claims at a new post-COVID low. Our roadmap begins with ARK Invest's Kathy Wood agreeing with Fed Chair Powell that the surge in prices will be temporary. Why she says we are in a, quote, risk-off period.
Plus, why GM is issuing an important warning for some Chevy Bolt owners. Don't charge it unattended. Don't park it inside. It could catch fire.
And Mark Wahlberg's backed fitness chain F45 set to debut here at the NYSE this morning. You don't want to miss our interview with Adam Gilchrist, the CEO, and Mark Wahlberg himself. So market's still digesting everything Jay Powell said, Jim, about inflation, about why purchasing MBS isn't affecting housing pricing or demand. What did you think?
Well, I go with what Charlie Scharf said, which is a CEO of Wells Fargo, red hot housing market, but does talk about the peak and actually just says, listen, we're at the peak in used cars. That's because the last month was down 1.3. That jives very well with the this early morning conference call from Taiwan Semi, which is now committing a great deal of money to make the auto shortage no longer a shortage. I think they're going to solve that problem. So a major area of inflation, I think, is going to be under control.
Well, you were saying we need to start seeing that reflected in data. And we got Philly Fed today. Prices paid 69.7, but prior 87.
Yeah, it's happening. And look, the supply chain had to catch up. Now, against that, David.
Yes, sir.
We're getting just too much negative input on Delta variant around the globe. And absenteeism, again, it's not settled. There are many countries where there's simply not enough vaccines. The Taiwan semi-conference call directly talks about the lack of vaccines in Taiwan to be able to vaccinate everybody. Somewhat geopolitical, by the way. The Chinese are charging them, and the United States is giving them. But you can see.
Is the Delta variant a market spoiler? Is that a fair point? Somebody was trying to make that point to me, saying it's scaring investors. Instead of pumping in money now, we're headed for contracting money supply.
Yes.
You believe that?
Yes, because there's too many breakthrough incidences.
Even though the death rate, thankfully, is staying low, and that's what we should ultimately be playing for, there still will be the reaction to the caseload that will slow things?
There is evidence that the death rate is spiking.
Is there?
Yeah. And among younger people, too.
Because I hate to get into the science somewhere, but it's obviously much more contagious, but it's not clear that it's more deadly.
Not clear. Evidence starting to come in that it might be. And Carl, obviously, around the globe, there's been a much, we've done very well in this country vaccinating. There are many other countries that are key to our supply chain that, frankly, have not gotten vaccinated. Wow. And the word is from people at the CDC, if you have not been vaccinated, you will get it. There's no people who will not get it.
The problem there is that the vaccination rate in this country is down 54% in a week. We're back to rates that we had in January.
In terms of the number of people getting the
vaccine. And we have excess vaccines, right? A lot of excess Moderna. We should send it to Southeast Asia where they're desperate. Or to India where they're desperate.
We're not going to send it to China, but there they had a vaccine of their own that's not proving particularly effective.
No, but they've done an informal deal with BioNTech.
Right.
That's not truly been announced.
What is behind, is this partially behind what has been a kind of a stealth rotation lately? And I'm not talking about some of the big tech names, which you know have done quite well, Apple amongst them, which has been on a run.
Right, which is,
but I take a look at Snowflake over the last 5 days.
Have you? Because
that's
very
fun. And I'm looking at it right now, Jim. I mean, this thing was 274 on the 13th of July.
Okay. The word is that this is a blowout quarter. The previous quarter was not a blowout quarter. This is the quarter where you're seeing the power of their model. Remember, their model is a usage model.
Right.
You don't pay a flat license, and you don't pay a contract for software as a service. It's a usage model. You pay when you use it. Now, there are a lot of companies that just don't use the cloud that given moment. And Frank Slootman's model, I think, is vastly superior to everybody else's.
But don't
model.
You think this also is a reflection sometimes of those quick rotations in terms of the high multiple software
stocks
that get sold because of what you were talking about?
Right. Frank Slootman is not really, you know, his outfit is not really affected, Carl, at all by the by anything in involving a COVID formation of even Lambda, which we're now worried about just getting the whole Greek alphabet in, because Frank is totally he's got his people all over the country, and he's adopted a very what would you say, David? A diffuse era?
Hybrid. Pro ultra remote work?
Hybrid. Ultra hybrid. And look, Slootman's a genius. We know what he did with ServiceNow. He's going to pull this off. I think that company's model is a very winning model. Why should we always have to pay every minute for a cloud if we're not using cloud? Very interesting.
We want to get to that. Also, Katie Huberty on Apple. We'll talk about it a little bit later. Let's quickly do Morgan Stanley, though. 185 beats 165. Revenue ahead. FICC, I guess, was a slight miss, Jim.
Everyone missed FICC.
Yep.
Everyone missed FICC. Brian Moynihan was, boy, those guys. My hat is off, by the way, to the work that Sarah and Wilf are doing. And they do, by the way, have Janet Yellen today.
Yes.
Because you heard, quite frankly, that to me, when I listened to the CFO of Wells Fargo, they've done the best on this, frankly, because they were so bad. But Morgan Stanley, it was a good quarter. The fact that the stock has run so much is against it. My charitable trust of those three.
By the way, you've said the same thing after every single earnings report this week.
Well, I've been right.
No, I'm not saying you're wrong, but the stocks have been down all week.
I want to take that back. That made me sound like a total jerk.
The stocks have been down all week. The earnings reports have been generally strong, but the market has not certainly risen to the occasion.
No,
yesterday Bank of America was down.
Well, that was one of those
sharply.
The net interest income was flat.
Yep.
If they could ever get a Fed rate increase, they would do well. Wells Fargo, I think it's really important to point out, versus 2019, this all travels up 11, entertainment up 38, restaurant up 28 versus credit card use up 13. NII was stable, net interest income was stable there, reduction in expenses. And how about this? They took out 2 million square feet of various branches and building. And this is Charlie Scharf now ready to play offense. He did say that a tremendous number of his people that he's hiring now are to play offense. Almost everybody earlier was defense.
Well, and now we got Evercore adding Visa, MasterCard, Tactical Outperform on some proprietary data that shows that cross-border spending is gonna grow.
It's going to come back. MasterCard's really, really, both companies are very well run. I think that the one that everyone's buzzing about is a Mizuho call saying that Square could be the equivalent of investing with J.P. Morgan in 1871.
Oh, well, now, they went back to 1871.
Yeah, literally the first line of the report.
Yeah, first line. And that, that's interesting. They're saying that
it was a big year.
Square. That was right before the panic of 18, whatever.
Yeah,
but they do say Square users, it could go to $150 to $200. When you make that kind of call, what happens is some clown on CNBC mentions it. So I am the clown. I'm Krusty. And I did it. Because I just took that and I said,
we're monitoring that Morgan Stanley call as well.
Are we?
Certainly we'll bring you anything of interest if we hear it from Mr. Gorman.
I'm waiting.
Okay. Well, don't wait too much. But
when we come back, though, a fitness chain backed by Mark Wahlberg going public today. He's going to join us exclusively at the Big Board, talk about F45 training, along with the company's founder and CEO, Adam Gilchrist. A lot more Squawk on the Street from the NYSE is straight ahead. Fitness chain F45 training will begin trading right here at the New York Stock Exchange this morning, looking to price around $16 a share. Joining us this morning in a CNBC exclusive, celebrity investor Mark Wahlberg and the company's CEO Adam Gilchrist. Gentlemen, congratulations. Great to have you.
Very excited to be here.
Thank you very much.
There's a lot of interest in this name and in this space because we know that fitness, Adam, in the past year has just been around the block. Lots of questions about whether we would ever go to the gym at all again. What's the future of that, given this interest today?
Well, I think it's the exact opposite. People are excited to be, rejoining their communities and being part of something special again. Not many folks that I know, want to do Zoom dinner parties. And the same applies for the gym. So we've seen our second month cohorts actually visiting F45 more frequently than pre-COVID-19.
Mark, what attracted you to the model? You obviously could have had your choice of any kind of fitness business plan to get involved with?
I've been approached by a number of fitness concepts, but the results that the memberships are getting, the members, the franchisees, the success that they're having, and the model. You know, people at any level of fitness can come in and do the workout, and I had never seen that before. You know, somebody who's clearly in the beginning of their fitness journey working out with somebody who is an elite athlete and being able to do the same exercises, whether they're modified, never the same exercise twice. It's absolutely fantastic.
So, Mark, there are people who think that Peloton changed the world, and there are a lot of people who would rather do it individually. I myself am much more of a group enthusiast because It makes me work harder. How do you feel about the idea of getting people off the Peloton and back to where they can compete, of course, you know, fun with the group?
I'm diehard fitness enthusiasts who don't have the schedule, have got to do it in the middle of the night or first thing in the morning, you want to get on a bike, that's fine. But eventually that becomes, you know, stagnant, it's boring. You want to be in there with the energy and people working out with you, alongside of you, inspiring you, pushing you, and supporting you. And so for me, I was always the guy who would work out by myself at 4 o'clock in the morning. By the time I went into a studio, I didn't want to do anything else. The energy
is... You should have given me a jingle. I'm at 4 a.m.
Hey, the energy is absolutely incredible when you see how excited... When we opened a studio in Studio City, people were in tears to be back into the studio and to back into that community because they have such a support system. And whatever they think their fitness goals are, they're always surpassing them.
All right, so Adam, if you're not ripped, people go to Planet Fitness, right, because they have pizza day. How do you make sure that someone goes to, and they do, to F45, they don't feel excluded because they're, I mean, you're kind of jacked. I'm not jacked. Why would I want to go to a club where everybody's like looking like the best in the world and I'm trying to get started?
Well, I think there's a few parts to that question, but I think the most important element is the fact that we actually have a judgment-free zone, and we call our studios sanctuaries. So we actually create an environment where, A, we don't have any mirrors in our studios, which is really important. B, we don't have any scales. And C, we applaud people for just turning up. So for us, the goal is to get people in 3 times a week. And that's really the paradigm shift between Planet, it's an incredible business, and us, where we actually want people to turn up and get great results because we are a premium product where they pay anywhere up to $3,000 a year.
Adam, being public company CEO is different than running a private company. Obviously, you'll have a board and a bunch of shareholders. What, first of all, are you going to do with the additional capital that you're going to be raising?
Well, we're going to be opportunistic with that capital. We wanted an extremely strong balance sheet. We've been fiscally conservative since 2013, having never had an unprofitable quarter. And there's not many startups that have been growing at this sort of breakneck speed that can boast that. So, you know, we recently purchased Flywheel because they had invested $65 million in technology. And we acquired that business for $25 million. But the reason it was such a great investment for us was not that we saved $40 million on tech costs, was the fact that it would have taken us 3 years to build out that leaderboard technology.
Yeah. Mark, what about your approach? I mean, do you always feel like you want to be in the gym? Or I would think certainly you've got to as well have something at home that you can do and or goes back to sort of the online experience that so many people in this country are now having.
I mean, it always depends on what I'm doing work-wise. If I'm preparing for a role where I have to get in shape or get out of shape, I just put on 30 pounds for a movie. So it was fun eating whatever I wanted for the first couple of days, and then it became a real task. But if I had my choice, I'd be going to F45 5 times a week. You know, you get in and out 45 minutes, warm up, cool down. The energy is incredible. It's never the same workout. Every day is completely different. 40,000 exercises in the data bank?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's... You know, it's incredible.
We've seen a few fitness models where the business model tolerates a high degree of churn, right? Or at least customers who sign up and then don't come in. What's your churn target? What's your retention target?
Well, we look at it net sales growth, actually. Our churn is low single digits per month. An average studio of ours has 175 members, and our break-even is only 75 members. So if you actually look at the style of community we're trying to create, A, it's very small, but B, the byproduct of that is it's very sticky because everybody turns up at 6 a.m., they know each other's name. And I think that's really important that, you know, we're trying to create communities, and community for us is actually even more important than the actual workout. We want people to have a third place to go. Obviously, they have home, work, and F45 is that spot where, you know, we mentioned it earlier, and I'll echo the point, it's a sanctuary for people to turn up and just have a fun 45 minutes of the day.
Now, Flywheel was very well attended by women. It was not necessarily, you don't want a gym that is all dominated by guys. Can you keep that up? Because I always thought that was extraordinary. A lot of people, a lot of women, great instructors, and then they just got laid off. Can you bring them back?
Of course we can. But I mean, our business, what's interesting is if you go back 10 years in group training, excluding CrossFit, 99% of attendees were female. At the moment, F45 has 75% female, 25% male. And, you know, our age demographic is 25 to 42. What's really interesting, though, about our company is we're the first company, first gym ever to go onto a military base and train soldiers to be ready for combat. That is absolutely remarkable. Secondly, you know, there's 4,000 colleges here, and we are the only third-party gym ever to go into a recreation center in a college. And people would argue whether Stanford's a great school or not. But the fact is, they got rid of all their group training and appointed F45 over our peers. And then USC signed up, UT. So we're looking at our TAM being obviously stretched out through colleges. And recently we just signed our third high school. So again, another accolade for us because we're the only third-party gym on the planet to be in high schools. And there's 25,000 high schools here. Like, let's help these kids get fit. And, you know, we think it's not just getting fit, but the mental health benefits of feeling stronger and, you know, being active is really important. And we're ultra excited about the high schools. And, you know, we've got Greg Norman here that's going to assist us with our over 50s workout. And
you got it all covered. And mental health has become
that's the one we're in, right?
Before we wrap up, Mark, we talk so often here about direct-to-consumer and the changes in your main business. How are you approaching things? You know, we're just curious in terms of how you think about the platforms for direct-to-consumer. Yeah. I think you've got a movie coming out soon that will go. And the compensation structure, I would assume, has changed as well for you, given you're not seeing the back end that you're accustomed to for some reason.
People decide when and where they want to view their content, right? So we want to make stuff that's entertaining, that people want to watch, how they decide to do that. I've always been a big supporter of the theater system. But people going out to experience theater. But I also love what Netflix is doing as well. So it's just changing. It's constantly evolving, and we want to continue to make great content. And they're making fantastic content.
So you're not buying AMC stock here like a memester.
Not necessarily. No, I think you've got to be able to continue to evolve. So I love to go to the theater. My next film is coming out in the theater. I always support that experience. But you know, people decide where and when they want to consume their content.
Has it changed the way you do a deal though? Is there a lot more upfront money now?
Yeah. Yes, it depends. But look, I just financed my first film. I've never done that before. Everybody told me I was absolutely crazy, but I own the film now, and I think it's going to be something that's really special. So I'm taking risks on myself all the time, things that I believe in, and that's why I bet on F45. In a way that I did, because I see the results that people are getting, and I hadn't seen that anywhere else. So somebody working out who has never been in a gym before, working out with somebody who can absolutely kill it, you know, and they're working out together, that's
I think people are beginning to think of you as an entrepreneur as much as an actor.
Absolutely.
So congratulations on that.
Hey, I got a family team.
You're not too worried.
This guy's invincible. He's invincible.
Mark Wahlberg, Adam Gilchrist, we will definitely watch FXLV later today. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Pleasure. Thank
Industrial
you.
Production out a couple of moments ago. Let's get to Santelli.
Yes, Carl, our June industrial production came in light, about 0.2 light. It was up 0.4%. It's the lightest since April. But do remember, in February, we had a minus number. So even though it is a bit light, we know there's constraints on supply chains, and this is an effect here. But one of the bright spots is utilization rates. Now, at 75.4, capacity utilization is also a couple of tenths light. However, it's still a post-COVID high. And do remember, if you look at February pre-COVID in 2020, which this is the highest number since, at that point it was 76.3. So we are slowly chugging back to that level. So a bit of a disappointment, but at least moves in the proper direction. Squawk on the Street will return after these messages.
Take a look at futures here. A few minutes before the opening bell, and Jay Powell in front of Senate Banking, which begins at 9:30 a.m. Eastern time. We'll try to take a little Q&A down the road this morning. In the meantime, claims, 10-year, bank earnings, and a lot more, all in focus. We're back in a moment.
Welcome back. We've got about 2.5 minutes before we get started with trading here at the New York Stock Exchange. Mad dash time, my friend. What do you got?
Well, David, there's always a question whether sometimes it's better to be never than late. And there's a piece out by Citi today, Chris Danely, terrific guy, saying that maybe it's time to go long AMD and short Intel. People have been doing this trade for ages, but that doesn't stop him from suggesting it. My problem with it, now it is true, Taiwan Semi is indicating that there's enough capacity for Advanced Micro to get the advanced chips. But, you know, the idea of coming in, and my charitable trust is long AMD, so I'm talking against my position, but the idea of this saying right now to go underweight Intel, the gross margins are going to be worse than we think in the 40s, but I like Advanced Micro because they're going to close the deal with Xilinx. I don't like it because they're still taking share from Intel.
People are still waiting for that Xilinx deal. It's interesting. Spreads have widened in the risk arbitrage world in part because of perceived increased antitrust risk and, of course, continued questions about China. We showed a five-year AMD. You were early, I would point out, of course, I like to.
Lisa Su,
almost all 1,600% of that you've been saying buy the stock.
Lisa Su took me to school when the stock was at five. And I admitted that I was an Intel-aholic, and she suggested a 12-step program against me being in that. And it was radical. And it was not a... By the way, as much I love her company, but at that particular dinner, I was caught quite unawares, and I never went back. I was convinced that at the end, she's right, I was wrong, back her. Now, Danely is finally backing her.
It's a little late.
Yes.
And that's being kind.
Yes.
Let's get a look at the opening bell here on this Thursday at the big board. You just saw them with us. F45 CEO Adam Gilchrist, Mark Wahlberg, celebrating the Fitness Studios IPO. Over at the NASDAQ, hardware company Hillman Solutions, celebrating a listing via SPAC. Did talking to those guys make you interested in the shares?
Yes. I did not realize how little they paid for Flywheel. I think that the Flywheel business was a terrific business, and they spent a lot of money on it. I think they're a little pricey versus Planet Fitness, but I also know that a higher-end gym can be quite exciting for people who are looking for engagement against each other. Competition does raise your ability and your strength versus being Peloton at home, just kind of doing it all by yourself. My wife was New York State champion bicyclist, and was a flywheel enthusiast, and is ready to go back. You didn't know that about her.
No, I'm always learning something new about Lisa, which is great.
She hates to talk about herself doing anything positive.
It's nice.
She's very self-effacing, unlike me.
A husband who likes to brag about her. It's a nice thing.
Well, see, because I like her.
It's even better.
It helps the marriage.
It was great hearing Wahlberg's comments about streaming a few moments ago. Netflix, by the way, highest since April 20, as they are going to make this push.
That was the end. People were talking about
They're going to make this push into gaming, hiring a Facebook veteran. And on that, Jim, GME shares were down 6% pre-market, at least.
Well, GME is obviously the memesters are struggling for more money. We do hope that they're not going to use the child credit to try to keep these stocks up. We got General Motors.
General
Motors is a suboptimal story in terms of, I think, David, in terms of charging
indoors, outdoors. You got to keep an eye on it at all times. Don't bring it inside.
Wahlberg gets up at four. He could have one.
There's GameStop shares. Here's GM. Down to almost 1.5% on that news.
On AMC, which we asked him about, Wahlberg about. The battleground there is the July 30 puts. There are people who want to break AMC. Adam Aaron is a friend of mine. I'd hate to see the stock broken, but the market is what the market does.
It's up 17x for the year. I mean, people talk about it collapsing. It's just started the year at $2.
I think
still got a $17 billion market value.
Adam Aaron's playing offense.
We've discussed that, yes.
Look, the main thing that
but
that
he still
went
may
wrong,
be on the 5-yard line going the 95 yards.
Well, I just watched a guy ring the bell who was invincible, Vince Papale.
Yes, that's Mark. You did mention. I remember that. He was an Eagle, right?
Yes.
I know.
Now, here's the issue. The stock has been down ever since Adam Aron said he's not going to issue any more shares.
Right.
If you were a short seller, that was the moment to pounce, because the difficulty was, what happens if he does 100 million shares and he cures the balance sheet? But he took that off the table, David. Now, there's a lot of money betting. These memesters really got to keep it up. Now, I have now decided at David's guiding, not to mention any of the small caps that people have been allegedly pumping and dumping. I don't think it's worth it to bring their attention.
Good.
But these are stocks that are on the red hot griddle. Let's put it that way.
Airlines not doing too bad. We do have Ray J this morning upgrading Delta to strong buy, 58 target. Jim, their point is that we're seeing some Delta variant worries kind of creep through travel names, but they still are poised for a rebound in business travel, and they say it's too strong to ignore, too hard to ignore.
I heard them speak with Phil yesterday. I really terrific. The one thing I would say is, can you imagine when they do get back into the international business? Delta, for instance, has a very big traffic to Italy, to Europe in general, and they're obviously doing nothing, certainly not getting anything from there. So I like that call very much. I really like that call. I think that American big traffic to Italy, that's the one. Delta, big traffic in America. But I don't know, when I fly Delta, I mean, they're full. I recently flew Delta and they were just full. But that's anecdotal, obviously. But
yes, it is.
But
yes, it
is. Ed Bastian pretty much confirmed that my anecdotal is empirical. CEO was a great interview.
Yesterday, yes. I actually.
We do some great interviews.
We do. The network does a lot of.
We do excellent
work.
You know, for instance, I'll give you an example. Closing Bell does Janet Yellen.
That's today.
But we do Mark Wahlberg. Right. Who's got more followers?
Who's got more zhuzh, huh?
Yeah. I mean, let's just face it. When it comes to followers, we're crushing Closing Bell.
Wahlberg's definitely. I'm looking at his arm right now.
He's so jacked.
It's
it was scary. You know,
arm.
When people confuse me with him, I always suspect that they have 91,000 vision.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good arm. Nice watch he had there, too.
What are you talking?
Did you see that watch?
What, you got some sort of man crush?
Wow. Guys, I wanted to do a favor report. What do you think of that? Although it won't be long, so don't go anywhere.
SPAC favor report?
I don't want to lose you. Yeah. No, it's not SPACs. It's Blackstone. And it's AIG. It's actually one of the more important corporate news stories of the morning.
How much more money can Blackstone make, David? How many yachts? How many yachts do they need?
Blackstone has had a great run of success as they have continued to transform themselves from what we still sometimes describe as a private equity firm into really what is a broad-based alternative assets manager with a great deal of permanent capital. And this deal with AIG, let's go through some of the particulars with you, and then let me just try and give you a sort of a sense as to what's really going on. But AIG, remember, is going to spend their life casualty business. 9.9% stake in that retirement casualty business is going to be taken by Blackstone. They're also going to be managing $50 billion. So they're transferring, essentially saying, here, you manage this money for us. Obviously, the premium money we bring in, and that'll go up to about almost $100 billion over 6 years. And again, they're paying $2.2 billion for that 9.9% equity stake, and they also are acquiring their affordable housing assets, and they're doing that in their Core Plus non-traded REIT, I believe it is. That's individual investors in there, but it just shows you the breadth of Blackstone. And by the way, we don't talk about it that often. The company has $118 billion market value. To put that in perspective, it's only $20 billion shy of Citigroup. So it is an enormous financial services company.
Are they the largest homeowner in the country?
Yeah, I think they were with Invitation Homes, yes. But that,
wow.
Remember, became its own company.
It's a great business,
yeah.
Owning homes.
But in this case, you know, obviously we all know insurance companies and the need to try to create some sort of return. Well, it's very hard to do in the corporate bond market or in any bond market.
Yeah.
And you do have that more of that ability here, perhaps, with Blackstone. Working those assets. You just can't buy enough liquid bonds. It opens up some yield opportunities, is the thought there. It frees up capital, obviously, for the insurers themselves. And it is sort of an evolution that continues for Blackstone.
It moves
them closer to credit. Remember, the liability here is 40 years. So you don't need liquidity if you're an insurer as much as you just want to make sure you got to generate some sort of return. Sorry, what's the question?
Who is the most humble billionaire in America?
There's a lot of humble billionaires.
How about someone who works at
John Gray?
Yes.
Yeah, he is.
He's just a humble billionaire.
Get to meet somebody who doesn't like the guy.
I don't know if he's really
It's kind of annoying. Oh, yeah, he is. Oh,
you think he's annoying?
No. It's annoying that nobody ever says that they don't like the guy. Everybody likes that guy.
Well, everybody likes him because he does a tremendous amount of charity work.
He does a great
And when he does it, he actually does it. It's not like he has a staff.
Obviously, he's, as president, CEO, yeah, Steve Schwartzman still.
You introduced me to him.
I know. It was an interesting deal, and it does show sort of the changing nature of these firms. They don't own an insurer, though, remember, so they're not taking on insurance liabilities, unlike Apollo and KKR, which actually do have insurance subsidiaries, but they continue to expand. Remember last week when I mentioned to you the financing of that Stamps.com LBO?
Yes.
And it was all credit funds. There were no banks.
Right.
Again, this goes back to that idea of where are you going to be able to find some sort of additional yield. That's leveraged loans.
Is the Fed worried about that
kind of stuff now that they're going to be able to invest in on part of these $50 billion.
I'm worried about this whole closet finance because we had it in 2008.
You're worried about what? The risk is being
right.
taken on? Yeah.
But maybe the Fed is on top of it. Jay Powell seems to have...
Well, the Fed is the one that says the banks at a certain level aren't allowed to do it, which is where the credit funds are able to disintermediate.
That's why Jamie Dimon, everyone keeps asking him, like, you know, what would Jamie Dimon feels like Prometheus bound. Doesn't he feel like Prometheus?
Why? Because
the weight of the world? What?
Well, he's tied up. That Bird keeps pecking at him, which is financial service, Square. Remember, Square, the best opportunity since Jim.
Yes.
And if he were unbound, he would do a much better job, like Upstart, which is unbound. He's bound.
They are heavily regulated,
yeah,
or certainly regulated
bound.
For obvious reasons. We did have a financial crisis that almost brought us to the end, and it was a result of risk-taking at many of our large financial institutions. By the way, on that note, Morgan Stanley, just always remind people, press releases are great. We rely on them, but it's always worth taking a look at the 10Q. Although even there, I remember going back and looking at Merrill Lynch's 10Qs. You never even saw you never even saw the initial CDO.
Sure did.
Not once in 05, 06, 07 while they were taking on.
Gorman has that we
no,
don't know?
No, not at all.
He's
I'm just
the opposite.
Reminding people, and it's a very different time. I'm just reminding people that it is important to remember that these are still difficult companies to understand the risks they're undertaking sometimes. And, I mean, you know, did you know Credit Suisse was doing what it was doing with Archegos?
No, but James Gorman has worked harder than anybody. No, you did have an Archegos situation.
They had a $900 million loss, yeah. That's fine.
That's a good point.
By the way, Gorman now saying that he expects 80% of staff to return to the office, mostly full-time, by September. 80% would be a number.
That's high.
As
a
we
big
continue
number.
To monitor
that's
back
a,
to work.
That's high.
Yeah.
I still continue to think that the world has changed and
it has.
That kind of company is an outlier. Actually, to 80%, I mean,
financial services is a bit different. Blackstone, which I was just talking about, also has many of its employees already back. Many, a vast majority. Financial services, though, I think is an outlier when it comes to the new world of work.
Well, personally,
and, you know, Blackstone may, but its portfolio companies and all those, no, they're all going to be like 3-2, 2-3 in terms of days in, days out. That's the world. That is going to be the world for corporate America, it seems.
But don't you think, Morgan Stanley, the flows are amazing?
Yeah.
They have huge flows. Wealth management is absolutely terrific business. I think the E-Trade business is crushing it. I like what they're doing with E-Trade very much.
Wealth management up 30, right? Probably the most important part.
Yes, that's big. You know, compare Robinhood versus E-Trade. I mean, E-Trade is not – Robinhood's nothing versus E-Trade, frankly. David, return on equity of 14%? How about that?
Yeah, and
I mean,
ROTCE of 18.6% right during the quarter. Yeah.
I mean, look at what's the amount versus, say, the last.
And we all know they've already doubled the dividend. Remember when they were allowed to by the capital return? They obviously also committed to buying as much as $12 billion in stock back over the next 12 months. All of which doesn't mean the stock's going up. It's not. None of the stocks have moved up this week.
At this moment, David, at this moment?
No, but the reaction to earnings has not been a positive one for the stocks.
I bet you Gorman, this is a sailing term. I don't know if you know it. He's going to buy back stock hand over fist. He's got the most capital to buy back stock. I thought, you know, Wells is a lot of capital to buy back stock. I don't know how aggressive Wells can be, but I think these guys can. David, by the way, they're back to number one in equities post Archegos.
It's good to know. It's good to know.
Yeah, and don't forget the div hike going 2X.
Indeed.
Meantime, we mentioned
the banks are related to the 10-year, which is related to inflation, which is related to what Cathie Wood said about inflation and growth on Closing Bell yesterday. Here's what she said.
Risk-off period. I know we got hit today. A lot of growth strategies got hit. There was a shift towards defensives. And I think there's a lot of confusion. But if growth is going to be scarce because inflation is going to come down, our kind of strategies, which generate revenue growth rates in the 25% plus range, are going to shine longer term.
There she is. Talk about someone who believes this is all transitory.
Big outflows yesterday in the ETF. Big. It's been a bad month. That said, I agree with their deflation just because I think we're at the peak. I think everybody's worried about what's happening now. They should look at the future. They should look at the Taiwan semi when it comes to used cars, which was a very big component. They should read the Weyerhaeuser piece by Goldman this morning, talking about how lumber's coming down. They should be focused, David, on the fact that oil has peaked, I believe, because the Permian's been sneaking up now 400,000 more barrels a day. It's been going up every single week. The deal that apparently some with OPEC Plus is going to produce more.
Right.
Oil at peak. Gas may be at peak as they switch to coal. Wow. We are in a moment.
You talked about this earlier in the week. WTI is on pace for the worst week in a month. On a week where you said maybe there's some voices who are arguing this is the top.
Well, you know, the balance sheets, as Rusty Brazil was our expert, went over yesterday. The balance sheets for the major oil producers in the Permian have been so abundant that you get a Devon run by Rick Moncrief, such a genius. They can turn on the jets now without hurting their. They have these ducks, you know, these ones that are drilled but not completed in the sense they can open them up. We're going to see maybe a million barrels back in the Permian, and the economy is not going to be able to handle it. The economy doesn't have that much demand. So there'll be a tipping point supply. I'm calling the top right here in oil.
Wow.
All right. You can hang me on it. I'm willing to take it.
Yeah. With that, Dow's down 140, and we're back to 43.55. Let's get to Bob Pisani on a busy day here, Bob, on the floor.
Oh, I'm just so happy, guys, because we're back to normal. Not just that Mark Wahlberg and Adam Gilchrist are here, and we've got a lot of IPOs, but people are on the floor. There's just hundreds of people walking around on the floor. It's like the old days. It makes me feel good watching everybody become wealthy, frankly, and let's hope that it continues for them. We've got three IPOs I'm watching today. Of course, a fitness center. We've got a club, and we've got a shopping center REIT. People are paying attention to that for a very specific reason. So obviously, we're waiting for F45, and here's our people that are going to be handling this. It's probably not going to happen between 11 and 12 would be my estimation. But bottom line here is they priced right in the middle of the range at $16. 15 to 17 was the price talk here. And you heard Adam Gilchrist, of course, talking about the company. And there's our man,
first
of course.
Indication coming up.
Peter Giacci. What, we have an indication,
first
Peter.
First indication coming up. 17,
here we go.
18.
17 to 18. You saw it here first. First indication, 17 to 18 for F45. Any idea about when this might happen?
I think we got some time here. This is the first indication. It's going to play out over the next hour or so.
Okay. You heard him. This is the man in charge right here, Pete Giacci. He heard sometime over the next hour. We'll talk more about that. I want to talk about Membership Collective, which is on the other post right over here. This is Soho House. This is, of course, a private series of clubs that are out there. 30 million shares at 14. That was the low end of the price talk, 14 to 16. You might say that's a little disappointing, but remember something. These aren't software companies. You get the big pop on the tech companies, not necessarily a membership clubs like this. So still doing very good. This, of course, backed by Ron Burkle. He, big owner in Yucaipa. We'll keep an eye on that. And finally, I want to give the NASDAQ some due as well. We've got Phillips Edison coming. This is a neighborhood shopping centers. This is a REIT. Now, I know that doesn't sound very exciting. They priced at $28, the low end 28 to 31. But this is, they're very big on large grocers. Grocers are the anchors, and they think that's going to distinguish them. We'll keep an eye on that. Groceries have done very, very well throughout the pandemic. 15 IPOs this week. 15. That's continues the crazy numbers that we had back in June. So that's very important here. Year to date, up 18%. And I've said this before. I'm happy there's a lot of them. I'm happy that they're doing well. But after the first day, they trade down. Most of them do. This is a problem. It's a little unusual. And the average IPO price is the percentage above is 53.7%. We're trading above their IPO price. Usually you want above 60%. So the bottom line is good numbers. We're getting a lot of IPOs out here, but aftermarket activity not so great. Finally, I just want to say something about Morgan Stanley. They doubled their dividend and had a very large buyback. So we're getting really big capital returns. The dividend yield is 3% now. That is very unusual for a bank because most of these banks, they're in the 1 to 2% range. Most of the time, when you start seeing 3% yields, you're talking about REITs, you're talking about food companies, utilities, oil companies. So right now, you're in a very rarefied, probably 60 companies in the S&P 500 have yields over 3%. Morgan Stanley is now one of them. Duke, Campbell, Merck all have dividend yields in the 3% range. Finally, last thing, keep an eye on the reopening stocks because so far we're seeing some lag in some of the big names. We're seeing Carnival, for example, Royal Caribbean, Occidental. Most of the oil names have been lagging in the last couple of days here. Gap and some of the retailers as well. Big day here, guys, and I'll be over here looking at some of these other IPOs in the next hour. Back to you.
All right, Bob, thanks. Meantime, the Fed chair testifying for a second straight day, this time over at Senate Banking. We're going to bring you live coverage once Q&A begins. First, though, take a look at Treasuries and how they're faring this morning. Jobless claims did come in 360K at the lows not seen since March of last year. And the 10-year is back to 132. We're back in a moment. You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.